Both of our readings today are from Sharon Salzberg, a Buddhist teacher and practitioner, a book she wrote called A Heart as Wide as the World. As Thich Nhat Hanh, the Vietnamese Zen monk, points out, compassion is not a noun. Compassion is a verb. It's not a thought. It's not a sentimental feeling. It is rather a movement of the heart that spurs the hands to action. As classically defined in Pali, compassion is the trembling or the quivering of the heart. The trembling or the quivering of the heart. But how do we get ourselves to do that? How do we do compassion? Compassion is born out of loving kindness. It is born of knowing our oneness, not just thinking about it or wishing it were so. It is born out of the wisdom of seeing things exactly as they are. But compassion also arises from the practice of inclining the mind, of refining our intention. The Dalai Lama once said, "I don't have any idea why people like me so much. It must be because I try to be compassionate. I have the aspiration of compassion." Thus, not even the Dalai Lama claims success. What he claims is a commitment to really trying. A conference in which the Dalai Lama was a leading participant. The event opened with a tree planting ceremony attended by all of the religious brothers of the host monastery, and I happened to be standing right next to the Dalai Lama as the ceremony was about to begin. Suddenly, across the courtyard, he spotted an extremely old brother in a wheelchair. Entirely disrupting the ceremony, the Dalai Lama cried out, "Look, he's old!" And followed by security people and television camera operators, he raced across the courtyard to embrace the old monk. What struck me about that moment was the pleasure with which the Dalai Lama cried out, "Look, he's old!" It was not pity. It was delight. His Holiness was celebrating the length of that old monk's life and the joy he felt at having him among us. We often think of compassion as being brought forth by seeming suffering, and certainly that's true. But there is also a quality of compassion, a feeling of deep connection that arises from pure rejoicing. So writes Sharon Salzberg. So I am very lucky to have really strong relationships with a lot of my colleagues in the ministry. And the result of that is that most of my friends are other young clergy people like me. And you might not be surprised that when whole groups of young clergy people get together, their conversations are rather a bit nerdier than those of other 20-somethings. And one of my friends, who is a pastor, has become the butt of many nerdy jokes lately. Now, we all say, and it's true, that you basically have one sermon, that you keep re-preaching in a different way over and over. And my friend Leland has one sermon that he keeps re-preaching, and it all comes around for him to the word abide, to abide. So you might say on any given Saturday evening, "Hey Leland, what's your sermon about?" And he will say, "Abiding in beloved community." And then you'll say, "Hey Leland, what's the meaning of life?" And he will say, "It's either 42 or abiding in beloved community." And then you would say, "Hey Leland, where should we go to lunch?" And he will say, and I kid you not, I don't know, but we should abide in loving community while we eat our lunch. I really barely exaggerate at all. Abiding with each other is so important that he can't get it out of his head, and there's probably a good reason for it. What is the point of it all, after all? What is the object of the whole endeavor? Why are we going to lunch together anyway? To learn to be in relationship with each other. To stand beside, to sit beside, to cry beside, to feel with, to love with, to abide with each other in community. It's as good an answer as any, and far better than most. And if you only have one sermon, that's not a bad one to keep preaching. According to our good old friends at the Webster's Dictionary, the word abide has two meanings. One of them is basically to put up with. The other, a rather more archaic definition, is to dwell alongside. And I think my friend Leland's association with the thought of abiding is at the intersection of the two, because the truth is that we all require some putting up with from time to time. To abide in beloved community is to dwell alongside one another even when it requires putting up with each other. Even when being in relationship requires the ample exercise of toleration, even when our loved ones prove themselves to be glaringly, obviously, gloriously imperfect, to abide is to dwell alongside one another without condition, living in each other's hearts, even when it's not the easiest and perhaps it is the hardest thing to do. To abide is to maintain a basic level of compassion even when the going gets rough. And to abide in one another is to love in a way that goes deeper than the traditional romantic notions we will be so barraged with this Valentine's season, is to acknowledge that come what may, we are in each other's lives. And some small portion of all of your sufferings and hopes will leak over the barriers between us and into my heart. To abide is to love one another once all the illusions are gone. Once the bloom has faded from the rose, it is to love still and to love more. And to love because of and in spite of all that we are. To abide is to say yes to relationship, even when you know what saying yes really means. Imagine, if you will, a hopeful young couple brimming with dreams of wedding gifts and tulle and new beginnings. The prospective groom goes down on one knee, extending a glittering diamond, and says, "Will you dwell with me for a really long time? Challenge me even when I loudly declare I do not want to be challenged, and have a piece of me in your heart forever, even if our marriage doesn't work out." And imagine that young woman saying, "Sure." Even if she knows. And in spite of and because of the twists and turns of the road ahead, imagine someone compassionate enough to say, "Sure." Imagine two little girls on the playground in the second grade. One says to the other, "Susie, will you wait for the bus with me every day for the next decade? Abide with me through the long, strange journey of childhood and stay my friend even when I turn 16, get my first boyfriend, and ignore you for 2 years." And Susie says yes and never, ever regrets it. Abiding with one another means saying yes even when we know what saying yes means. Once all the illusions are gone, whether or not we can admit it at the time, every time we enter into a relationship, we make these commitments. to join in relationship with other people and to be a part of each other's stories. Commitments of love are commitments of mutual abiding, of dwelling with one another, either literally or spiritually, for the rest of our lives, no matter what happens. Even when marriages end and friendships do fade away, those who have found a way for even a short time to abide with another person will always dwell together, even a little bit. Those whom we love and whom we have loved are our fellow creatures. And once we learn to abide with them and they with us, we see that we literally create each other by living our lives together, even when it's not all hearts and tulle and roses. Maybe it's true that that blushing bride could never say yes to love if she knew how hard it would be. Maybe none of us really could. Maybe we would always protect ourselves and guard our hearts if we understood the challenges of abiding in relationship. But life itself calls us out of our isolation. It calls us into community. It calls us out of our protected selves and into the danger and delight of interconnected relationship. Perhaps none of us can really love conditionally, but there is at least one man who believes we should try. Even the Dalai Lama knows it's hard work. He himself sees himself as a work in progress. In our reading this morning, Sharon Salzberg reminded us that the only reason people like him so much is because he keeps trying to be compassionate. He leans with all his might toward a compassionate life, toward a life where he can truly abide with the entire world. He has the aspiration of compassion, and he's willing to live in such a way as to make that aspiration a little closer to true every single day, and maybe that is always enough. In our readings, Sharon Salzberg talks about the nature of compassion, particularly in the life of that great man, the Dalai Lama. And she says, while every world religion focuses on the power and responsibility of love, Buddhism in particular casts love as the essential human condition. In Buddhism, it is our very selves, what's called the Buddha nature within, that calls us out from our isolation and into a meaningful sense of abiding connection with all things. It's the Buddha inside all of us that makes us love. And so if my friend's central doctrine is a doctrine of abiding, the central doctrine of Buddhism is that of compassion. To have compassion for all things is to feel with all of creation, to let all that surrounds you pierce your heart. I know that it's hard enough to feel with our very much loved ones. It's hard enough to feel with our family members. It's hard enough to let their needs pierce our hearts. But to feel with all of creation is a pretty tough sell. And yet the Dalai Lama teaches that we can never fully escape our Buddha nature. Teaches that we can never fully get away from our tendency to love, no matter how hard we try. The Buddha nature won't let us abandon some little leaning inside toward compassion. The Buddha nature won't let us shut ourselves off from each other entirely, won't let us totally stop abiding each other. As a result, no one is beyond the reach of compassion, and no one is so separate from us that they aren't worthy of being put up with. I know that having a Buddha nature that extends to a heart as wide as the world and a compassion that touches all things is pretty optimistic. I know that the Buddha nature calling for compassion for everything is a pretty tough thing. I'm not even sure I can rationally assert it. But I do know that there are people who spend lifetimes living doctrines like that. There are people who come very close to making all that optimism real in the world. Nelson Mandela himself once said that he made friends with his jailers by exploiting their good qualities. He found the Buddha nature even in them. And by inviting them to abide with him, even in such extreme circumstances, Mandela proved his belief that compassion is available to everyone in every circumstance. He proved that compassion for him was always an option. Compassion is connection without condition, literally unconditional love. And in the eyes of many Buddhist practitioners, such love is not only possible but necessary. It's what we human beings were made to do in this world. There are some concerns I have with how we use the word compassion in our culture. Often it gets really watered down. And instead of being a challenge to live differently, compassion ends up feeling like an invitation to pity stray cats or feel sorry for sick people. But compassion is not the same as pity. It doesn't entail being in the presence of another's suffering, bemoaning it a bit, and moving on unscathed. Rather, it involves being in the presence of another's suffering and letting that suffering pierce your heart so that you cannot help but act and live differently, so that you see the Buddha nature shining through them. So instead of seeing a small stray cat and feeling sorry for it, a truly compassionate person sees a stray cat, notices the Buddha within it, and rejoices at the opportunity to help. When the Dalai Lama saw an old man wheeled into that quiet, somber ceremony, he ran to him, rejoicing, "Look, he's old!" He said it the way a teenage girl might say, "Look, it's Justin Timberlake!" As if it were the greatest honor in the world, the greatest thing he could think of, to accompany this frail old man up a garden path and push his wheelchair. It was the greatest honor he could imagine. That's not pity. That's a heart pierced by joy at the sight of a fellow creature. There is, in addition to words like pity, other words that get confused with genuine compassion, and one of those, I think, is the word empathy. To feel compassion is to feel empathy, is a parallel that we often draw. And while that statement is largely true, Buddhist tradition teaches us that there is a very sharp difference. Empathy is an idea. It lives in the realm of thoughts. It's something you think about. But compassion, we heard in our reading, is a verb. Compassion is an action word. It involves doing your life in such a way as to make your empathy real. Mandela didn't just think about compassion, he did compassion. To use it as a verb, he compassioned his jailers into being in relationship with him. He compassioned them to have open hearts. To actively compassion a person involves more than feeling. To actively compassion someone makes a lot of demands on all of us. It's not just some cozy catch-all feel-good phrase for being a basically decent person. Author Mark Ian Barash's depiction of compassion is wonderful. He says, "Compassion isn't simply opening a spigot and coating everything in a treacly, all-purpose goo. It requires a gut hunch that whatever I do to others, I do unto myself. It calls for appreciating not only what comforts us, but what pierces us." The word compassion comes from the Latin compatior, which means to suffer with, while its opposite, apathy, literally means not to suffer, and it connotes a heart benumbed, a hardened heart. That literal translation of compassion, to suffer with, and its opposite, apathy, a heart benumbed sum up some important things. For how often have we all felt that? On a Thursday night when you get home from work and you're exhausted and a heart benumbed is the only answer left at the end of the day. When you look at a world of war and you're so overwhelmed by the struggles that a heart benumbed is the only answer to the warfare on the television. There precisely lies the challenge of a compassionate life. A compassionate life calls us to have porous hearts, pierced through with sharp strands of love. A porous heart lets the world in rather than keeping it out. It soaks up the hurts and hopes of fellow creatures like a sponge. A porous heart and a compassionate person open themselves wide to the world and risk the danger of feeling whatever comes their way. Compassion is not just a spigot of ooey-gooey sentimentality. It is an almighty risk. The Dalai Lama speaks of love. And when he speaks of love, he doesn't mean sentiment. What he means is a recognition of our shared humanity and a genuine concern for the well-being of all things. And perhaps my friend is right after all, when he says that learning to abide with one another is the key to the whole mess of living. That learning to abide is the key to all of our endeavors. To be with one another, even when it's hard. To say yes to relationship, even once we've abandoned our illusions. To crack open our hearts to the world, even though we know we invite suffering. These are the challenges of compassion. And these are the reminders that there are people like the Dalai Lama who believe we can live up to these challenges, who believe we must. Let us compassion one another, now and in the days to come. Let our hearts be pierced by all that we meet, including one another. May it be so.